in the final shot of the third quarter. It's Kemba fires it and makes it.
All right, welcome back, BuzzBeat listeners, to episode 12. I'm your host, Spencer Percy, and as always, along with me, co-host Richie Randall. Richie, how's it going, my friend?
Doing pretty good. The Hornets are kind of depressing right now, but other than that, I can't complain.
The Hornets are indeed depressing right now. I actually play a day game today, a unique 5 o'clock tip at home against the Clippers, in which seems like a must win, but I think we could maybe call them all that.
Exactly.
At this point, if we're that hell bent on making the playoffs.
Hey, Spencer, that's a giveaway game, so I'm going, just to let you know.
Oh, are you? Yeah. So what's the deal? Why is that game at 5 o'clock?
I have no idea. No clue.
Yeah. I figured maybe there was something that night in the arena, or I don't know. But that would be too short of a time to turn around the facility anyways. Yeah, I don't know. That was kind of odd to me. But anyways, we'll have fun. If you want to follow Richie, I'm sure he'll be tweeting from the handle at the game today. So here on the podcast, we're recording this on a Saturday morning. We're going to talk about the recent Hornets struggles. I think we've said that at the beginning of every episode for a while now. Kemba is slumping now. The current direction of this team, and of course, we have to get in our debate about Frank Kaminsky. I think Richie and I disagree on a very fundamental precept of Kaminsky's game. So stick around for that. Circus never ends with Frank. All right, Richie, so let our listeners know where they can find us online and listen to us on the go.
Yeah, like always, you can find us over at queencityhoops.com for all of our content, whether that be written content with previews and recaps or our podcast as well. We have a tab there. And so if you're loving our podcast, also check out almightyballer.com where you can find us, your only Charlotte Hornets A-team podcast, as well as other podcasts dedicated to the remaining NBA teams. I think that Chris Axman's got all but two kind of wrapped up by now. So eventually, you know, they're going to have all 30 teams out there. So, and then lastly, search BuzzBeat through iTunes podcast app or the Stitchers app as well. So you can find us in a variety of places.
Yes, so we are a member of the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. Make sure that you are checking out all the great stuff, as Richie said, over at almightyballer.com. Soon we will take over the NBA podcasting stratosphere, so make sure you're jumping on board now. all right, so let's jump right in here. The Houston loss, I think the first place we can start, Richie, is a solid first half. Zeller's back in the lineup. The offense looks back to normal. You know, all is well in the universe again, and it all comes crashing down in the second half. But let's start with the first half. You saw this entire game. I saw as much of it as I could, but I saw it on replay, and I kind of rushed it. So I'm going to kind of give the mic to you first here. Talk about the Hornets' performance in the first half with Zeller back in the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, the first half was definitely the better of the two halves. When Zeller was in there, the offense looked like the old offense when Zeller was healthy. A lot of, you know, screening action, a lot of action going towards the rim because of those screens. We set a team high in assist for the season in the first quarter with 11 assists in total. Batum was racking up the assist. He had 8 by halftime. And a lot of his assists are coming, and you can see this with Zeller back, on screen. So when Zeller's in there setting those screens, whether it's for Batum or someone off the ball, it opens up a lot for Batum, and he'll find you. If you cut towards the basket, whether you're MKG or Kemba, he will find you for that easy bucket. So, yeah, first half, we came out strong. I thought that MKG played solid defense the whole game, but you can definitely look at the box score and tell that Harden struggled in the first half. I think the team overall shot 10 of 23 in the first quarter, that Houston that is, and they only scored 23 points. So for an offense that is very high-powered like the Rockets, we did a very good job on them, especially in the first quarter, but just kind of overall in the first half. So that's kind of what I saw. MKG's defense was good. Batum was racking up the assists, and the offense looked like the offense of old with Zeller in there.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more with everything that you said. I mean, that was our starting five really at its best, I thought, in the first half. I mean, the team as a total in that first half against Houston shoots 51%. They assist on 17 of the 21 made field goals, which is an incredible rate. It really went through Batum in that first half, and you kind of pointed that out. I mean, Batum has 8 assists in the first half. He scores 7 points. MKG is very active. Marvin's very active. Kind of felt like Kemba could just take it down a gear in that first half.
Right.
The offense humming so well. So, all right. So, yeah, let's transition to the second half, which is a completely different story for the Hornets. Richie, you and I have talked about it before, but Clifford preached take care of the basketball. Don't give up offensive rebounds. Create more scoring opportunities for yourself than your opponent. And it's, those two things. Don't give up offensive rebounds, rebound the basketball, and don't turn the ball over. Everyone knows in the NBA, that the Hornets just don't beat themselves because they do those things very well. They did not do, the turnover thing well against Houston. And in the first half, they were good enough offensively to survive those 13 turnovers. But in the second half, they turned it over 9 more times, and they're just not as good offensively.
Right.
36% from the floor, 16 to 44, only make 4 triples of 17 attempts. It was the Hornets team really we've seen here, I would say, for the past 10 games or so, just really bad offensively. And you're just, that's going to catch up to you, especially against a team like the Rockets. So they come out in the second half and kind of do their thing. They're almost 50% from the floor. They make 9 triples. James Harden gets it going for 17 points, 6 rebounds, 4 assists in the second half. And it all comes crashing down around Charlotte. So, but it's the turnovers. That is the reason that the Hornets cannot hold on to this game. And then on top of all this, Richie, Cody Zeller re-aggravates the thigh injury. It's just demoralizing what's going on with him right now and him not being able to stay in the lineup.
Right. So the third quarter, that's exactly when it happened, exactly when we needed him the most heading into the third quarter and the fourth. And our offense just changes. When he's out there, you can tell the difference in how our offense is run. Things open up a little bit. The spacing is created because of his screen setting. Yes, it's most definitely demoralizing. And I know that tonight's game against the Clippers, he's probably going to be a game time decision, questionable, whatever you want to call it. So cannot afford to lose him. We've seen the effects that it has taken when he's out of the lineup. And we saw it again last night against the Houston Rockets for a team that that has little room for error. And we are turning the ball over 6 times in the third quarter. It's going to be tough to make that up, especially against the Houston Rockets. So, and especially when we don't have Zeller in there to kind of facilitate the offense.
Yeah, and I don't know that there's an official word yet. I don't think there is, but it does not sound like he's going to play tonight. So, the negative of that is obvious. The positive, or I don't know if you consider it a positive or not, but we're going to see Kaminsky back there at center, I'm assuming. So a little bit more of a sample size to see Frank at the 5. Does it work? Is that his position? That debate was hot and heavy, especially when Zeller was previously out for the 8 games. And we're going to have that debate later in the show, Richie. But I understand the Zeller thing for just a second. If he can't stay consistently healthy, and if this injury, which, it's just a deep bruise that it just seems like a really nasty injury. It's not like this long-term concern, I don't think, but it's just one of those lingering, sticks around. He can't get healthy. He can't get back to full strength. If this continues for 2 more weeks, or whatever it may be, it's time to start asking some tough questions. And I think we're going to talk about this again later, but yeah. The Hornets can't make the playoffs without Zeller in there, correct? Would you agree with that?
I would agree. And if we somehow stumble into the playoffs at the 8 seed without Zeller, it's going to be a sweep.
Yeah, exactly. And why is that, is that worth it? I would say no, but again, I think we're going to talk about that a little later. Okay. Kemba, we're at the point now, the 5 game mark, I would say, where he's really just not been himself. And I'm ready to start asking some questions and having this discussion. Is it fatigue? Which I tend to think that it is. It looks like it's fatigue. You can tell when Kemba just looks a little bit, I don't want to say disinterested, but just kind of not engaged. And he hasn't looked nearly as engaged, especially with the basketball, creating offense in the past 5 games. As the all-star Kemba looked, earlier in the season. In the past, the stats over the past 5 games, they're ugly. Kemba's averaging about the same amount of minutes that he has for the season, maybe about a minute less. He's scoring 15.5 points. He's shooting just shy of 34% from the floor. He's shooting 32% from behind the arc. He's turning the ball over almost three times a game, 2.8 to be exact, to 5.2 assists.
Which is above his average. That's too many turnovers.
Way too many turnovers. His rebounding is way down. He averages 4 a game on the season, only 2.8 here in these past 5 games. Everything is way down. All his numbers are way down here in these past 5 games. And we all know without him, especially when you're down another guy like Zeller, the Hornets don't have a very good chance of beating anybody in this league. So, I don't know if it's just kind of an outlier here. He's just kind of going through a slump, or I don't know if he's just kind of regressing to the mean here. Richie, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, there's probably all different combinations kind of factoring in here with Kemba's slump here in February. I think that he's definitely feeling the pressure to string some wins along because early in the season we leaned on him, but also I think Zeller was part of that too. So recently with Zeller being injured, I feel like with us losing as well, like he's feeling the pressure, and I think fatigue can also play a factor. Obviously, we're later in the season, over halfway through, and like you said, he's playing about the same amount of minutes here in February, but it's probably getting to him as well. And I noticed a real difference when it comes to driving to the lane and trying to finish at the rim. He's not getting the calls that he's used to getting, and that's frustrating him even more. So I just think he's pressing. I mean, and the turnovers are leading to empty possessions, and he is shooting just 32% in the restricted area at the rim for the month of February, which is not good. Not good at the season. He's shooting 57% in that same area. So you can tell around the basket is where he's struggling a lot, and that's where he gets frustrated the most because, he's a smaller body, and when he doesn't get the calls, he kind of lets that affect both ends of the court, and his defense, his defensive rating here in February is pretty low, or pretty high, however you want to look at it, 108.8, which is by a good margin higher or lower than any of his defensive ratings out of any month this season. So this is his first month in which he actually has a negative net rating as well, so a negative 10 net rating over the past 4 games here in February. I know it's a small sample size, but we can definitely see the frustration picking up with Kemba.
Sure, absolutely. And that restricted area stat is scary. I mean, it seems like, it's 25% lower than what it is on the year. I mean, obviously, there's some part of that that's an anomaly, right? But
right.
The other part of it is that teams have figured something out. I mean, there's a scout out on how to deal with Kemba going to the basket. Something that, and I need to watch it more, but it appears to me the teams have reverted back to guarding Kemba in pick and roll situations like they did in his early seasons, which was just kind of don't respect the outside shot. And I don't want to say that's what they're planning to do, not respect the outside shot, but they're not willing to let Kemba beat the hedge man or the second defender to the rim. Where Kemba gets that second defender is, that action, that pick and roll action happens high on the basketball court. Kemba gets going downhill, and he actually gets the hedge defender on his hip. So he gets him behind him, and now Kemba's really good at using his body to keep the defender off, extend the basketball, and lay it in. We've seen how good he's gotten at that. Now it looks like that hedge defender, they're just kind of sagging low, sagging under, making sure that Kemba does not go by that second defender. And I think we'll need to watch it more. So help me watch that, Richie, here today and next week. But it appears to me that teams are just really committed to not allowing Kemba to beat the second defender, get him on his hip, and beat him to the rim because there's just no answer for him there. It's kind of like that pick your poison defensive strategy.
Right.
What would we rather him do? Would we rather hedge high and then risk him going by us? Because once Kemba gets to the hip of the hedge defender or he splits it, I mean, once he gets past that, he's too fast. There's no third defender that can get there in time and keep him away from the rim or really contest the shot. But, I think you can live still. As much as Kemba has improved from behind the arc, I think you still have to live with that shot. And having his defender fight over the screen as much as you can, bother the shot. You see what I'm trying to say? I mean, I think it's just kind of pick your poison, and teams have said, look, you're not beating us to the rim, so go ahead and chuck that shot if you want, but you're not getting to the rim.
And that's especially working here when he's shooting the three ball, at the low 30s. So, yeah, that's gonna have a bigger effect if he's not making that three.
Yeah, I mean, and I think the mental effect is that, in that at that ball screen, at the level of the screen, he comes around it, and now instead of seeing that defender right in his face, he sees that guy kind of sagging low, and now his thought process is different, and he's second-guessing himself more, okay? And he's taking that shot some of the times, but he's probably not pulling the trigger as confidently as he was before because now he's getting a different look. And then the other thing is when he does try to drive it, he really is driving it into traffic now, and he's driving it into the chest of the second defender instead of kind of getting that second defender on his hip or on his back and really just negotiating the basket by laying it in. So I think it's really a mentality thing. He's got to adjust now to how teams have adjusted to defend him. And, you know, it's just an eye test thing. So I'm not telling you that this is exactly what's happening, but it appears to me that teams have been more conservative in guarding him and just taking away the basket and taking away the painted area.
And I wonder if you can do that, especially with Zeller out, because Zeller does set the screen very well and create space for Kemba. Let's say Kaminsky sets the screen. You can sag off of that screen too because Kaminsky's not making his three. So it also plays a part in who is setting the screen because, you know, Zeller's not stretching the floor, but you got to stay with him because he'll cut to the rim for an easy basket.
No, you're exactly right. That's a great point. That's a great point. So, I mean, you know, it does matter on who's, you know, who's setting that screen. I think we've seen Kaminsky when he starts as the five, he shoots the ball better. Ask me, you know, why that is. I think why that is just because he's engaged in the offense, right?
Yes.
He is that screener. He knows the action is coming his way. And we've talked about this before, Richie. If he's not engaged in the offense, just get him off the floor because he floats. So he's engaged in the action, and he's a better player because of that. But, you know, I don't know. If I'm Coach Cliff, I don't just – this is five games. Like, I don't just keep kicking the rock down the road here with Kemba and hope that he gets better. I mean, I get him going by drawing up stuff for him immediately. I know we like to go to MKG, you know, to start games and start second halves to try to get him engaged offensively. But, you know, you got to get Kemba going now early in the games – because he's the guy who has to score in massive amounts for the Hornets to have a chance. I mean, high ball screens, start the action high on the floor, start it early in the game. Don't wait until a moment where you absolutely need a basket, you know, to call plays like that. Got to get Kemba going early. So we'll see if Clifford can make that adjustment because the slump cannot continue. But if it does continue, kind of like the Zeller conversation, Richie, I mean, I think what you said about Zeller is that the team can make, maybe be the eight seed without him in the lineup potentially, but that's not the case with Kemba, right? Like if he continues to slump here and he comes crashing back down to earth, the Hornets are not going to make the playoffs, correct?
No. I mean, currently they're sitting, I think, in the ninth seed, and you got the Heater on this crazy win streak or about to pass us. So, yeah, with the way that Kemba's playing recently, I think that if this form continues, we'll be on the outside looking in. So, yeah, I don't see us making the playoffs if Kemba continues these struggles and they're finding ways to defend him a little bit better and his three-point shooting is continuing to dip. I don't see how it works, especially with our backup point guard situation. We don't have anyone that can come in and replace him. I feel like that's the biggest gap between our starting point guard and our backup point guard. Out of any position, that's kind of where the biggest gap lies.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, that's a good segue into the next discussion here, which is, and there have been reports now that the Hornets are out there looking for point guard help. You know, what are they going to do at that position? Right now, you're riding with Brian Roberts as your backup point guard, and you know, I think the Hornets are probably willing to just kind of bite the bullet on that and you know, play with Roberts until Sessions gets back. But they are out there looking for help at the backup point guard position right now. Probably looking for somebody that can also, you know, not only run the second unit but play with Kemba at the end of games, much like Mo Williams did, much like Jeremy Lin did. Richie, do you think the Hornets are going to be a buyer or seller as the trade deadline is now only, golly, it's only 12 days away now?
Yeah. Guys, this changes like every week with me. Every week it just changes with me. If I were the GM, I would probably, let me put it this way, I wouldn't be a buyer. I don't know if I'd be a seller. I might stay as the way the roster is currently constructed and just kind of hold a little bit. But I don't know if I'd go out there and start trying to buy players just to push for a 7 or 8 seed. I just don't see that being beneficial. The way that our season is going, we're on a downward trend. I felt like if we were to make a trade, it should have been earlier, or a significant trade. It should have been earlier. So by the time our schedule eases up, I think a little bit in late February and early March, we would have already made that decision on whether or not we should make a trade. So what I think is going to happen, I'm not sure. What I would prefer to happen is if we either turn into, I mean, maybe sellers, or just kind of hold as we are right now. And I would not be opposed to looking long-term down the road and trading one of our established pieces, maybe for a draft pick, and not necessarily like a replacement player, but someone of equal value, or a little bit lower in value, maybe for a Batum. So maybe a Batum for a draft pick. Just throwing that out there. I don't know how you feel about that.
No, I mean, I think that's in play. I mean, I think it's a conversation that you're going to see on social media more and more, you know, as the trade deadline come up. I mean, you know, I think there are guys out there the Hornets can get to help right now. I'm just not sure, again, you know, there's more sellers than there are buyers, I think, at this deadline. So that, you know, that means that the price is going to be high. There's just the market is not flooded with buyers. So, you know, the price is going to be high if you want to improve. And, you know, a guy like Lou Williams, I know that's been floated. I still think that cost you a first round pick.
I think so too.
You know, yeah, I took a look, you know, yesterday. I mean, as crazy as it seems, Richie, you know, you look at a guy like Courtney Lee. I mean, he's got 3 more years on his contract after this at about $12 million a year, which really isn't crazy. If the Hornets are as hell-bent as they appear to be on making the postseason, then, you know, call the Knicks about Courtney Lee. I know you had a chance to re-sign him in the offseason and you failed to do it, but, like, if you're making trades for Miles Plumlee and to take on 4 more years of, which is, by all intents and purposes, going to look like dead money on the back end of that contract, unless right. you trade him.
Right.
Like, if you're doing that kind of stuff, then go look at, you know, acquiring another contract that runs out to the, you know, to 18-19 or 19-20, which is when they're going to have to ask questions about Frank Kaminsky, and he hits restricted free agency, which is when they're going to have to re-sign Kemba Walker. So, like, if that's the window, which it appears like the front office is saying, okay, look, we're going for it during this group of years. Okay, Batum's on contract for the longest. Marvin's through 20. Kimba's through 19. MKG's through 20. So, like, there's your window. So go get another long-term contract of a player that you think could potentially be in your starting lineup, or at least a very important you know, contributor in some form for that time frame. Does that make sense? And I think Courtney right. Lee is like one of the – he's that kind of guy. It's not a ridiculous contract. I don't know. It's just I don't get the plan, and I don't really know that there is one outside of – Well, I mean, see, the Hornets – not the Hornets now. We're really dating back. Charlotte basketball has done this before. You know, when they had Steven Jackson, they had Jared Wallace. They were kind of fake good, and I think that's kind of what we saw last year. And, you know, they should have probably beat Miami in that series, and that was the opportunity to really take a step forward. So you kind of trick yourself into believing that you're something, and – you know, I'm not so sure this season isn't kind of like the dose of reality. This is probably more along the lines of what you actually are, especially when you're not willing to fight for guys like Jeremy Lin, Al Jefferson, and especially Courtney Lee. You know, I don't know. I'm rambling. I'm probably not making sense.
Well, no, it's like, no, you are.
You can't have it both ways, right? Like, you can't say, well, we can't afford to bring these guys back, but then at the same time make these stupid middling trade moves to stay relevant. You know what I mean? Like, if you're going to go for it, then go for it. Then keep Courtney Lee, right? Like, right. keep this core that had so much to say. Keep them together. But, like, when you hit 5 games under 500, okay, and you're battling injuries, like, it's time to start asking some tough questions and stop making these stupid trades and rentals that just keep you in the hunt for the 8 seed in the East. Like,
that's not the direction to go. That's not the direction
to go. It's not the direction to go. I mean, I get it. You know, it's a lot of revenue to host even 2 playoff games. I get it. This new Hornets brand is still in its infant stages. You know, the rebranding of the Hornets, in other words. And I think it's been a success so far. But you got to put the books aside at some point. You got to get the CFO out of the conversation at some point. And we got to talk basketball. Right, we got it. We got to talk what the long term, the plan is for the Hornets and what decisions are best for the long-term plan of the Charlotte Hornets. And these stupid middling trade deadline moves, it's not the answer, Richie. Right. Tell me if you disagree.
No, yeah, I mean, it confuses us. Maybe, I mean, they're probably confused on what to do. That trade for Plumlee is such a head-scratcher because, to me, it signals that they want to win now. They're trying to make a push for the playoffs. But if they're not going to make another trade, in the current situation that we're in, we have to be buyers. Like you were talking about, we got to go for it now. Now, I would not be in this position to begin with. I would not have gone for Plumlee. I would not have done that trade. I don't mind him in our system, per se. I mean, I think that he fits our system. But like with the way his contract is, that's a huge downside. And to me, that signals that we're trying to win now. So to me, they better be buyers because you can't have it both ways. They're like going for it but not going for it, and it's kind of hindering our future too. So I don't know what they're going for. Are they going for the now or the future? And I think they're confused as well, and they're confusing fans.
Yeah, no, exactly. And that is really the reason I bring up the Courtney Lee idea is, you know, I think, yes, you made a mistake. The Hornets could have fit him in, and it would have been tough. They would have approached the tax. But they could have stayed under. They could have gotten creative. It could have worked. They made a mistake there in not bringing him back. And he, I think he wanted to stay in Charlotte. Like the Jeremy Lin, Al Jefferson, like those are different. I think it was time to move on from Al. I think you want to, you know, it was just too crowded there. Like Zeller's your guy's center. You want to see what Frank can do there. You know, and there's just where do you fit Al in? Jeremy Lin wanted to be a starter. That wasn't going to happen in Charlotte. So I get it with those two. Right. But like Courtney Lee, it was a mistake. I think the front office would admit to you that it was a mistake. But here's the good news is that if you pick up the phone and you call New York, I mean, well, we don't know what in the hell is going on in New York. But I think that they are willing to have a conversation about it. Like why wouldn't they? You know what I mean? Like if you say, okay, Lamb, Sessions, that makes the money work. And then you get a young piece in Lamb, and then you know what? We'll throw in a first, like whatever. We screwed the Courtney Lee deal this summer. We're going to pay an 18 for unprotected first round pick, which will probably be, you know, what, a 15 to 20 pick, like whatever. In a draft we're not sure about yet. Here's a pick. You know, I think that the Knicks would do that deal if they're smart. And you know, although it doesn't make a whole lot of sense for Charlotte, because you're like, well, wait, now you're just backtracking. You know, and right. Paying a first round pick for a mistake that you made. But again, to your point, Richie, like, but you're going for it anyway. So like, why not? Like, yeah. You know, like if this is the direction we're going, then why not?
Currently, that's the way it looks. I mean, so why? I mean, I would not be opposed to that trade because as it currently stands, that's the direction we're heading.
Exactly. So and maybe we're the ones that are wrong and we don't get it. But from the signs that the front office are sending us, it sure does seem that that's kind of what's going on here now. Reverting back to what you were talking about was, you know, send Batum out or send a Minsky out or maybe even MKG. I do not think that's off the table either. And here's something that I will say is that going and getting Plumlee, throwing, you know, his long-term contract in and now really adding a third center, you know, if you consider Frank to be a center into the rotation here, is that trade meant as a, you know, a backup center just to get a guy that helps the second unit in the long term, or is that's actually going to be our second center, you know, long term with this core, and we're getting ready to trade Frank Kaminsky? I'm just being a conspiracy theorist, but I wouldn't rule that out. And here's the other thing, and I'm really going to sound like a conspiracy theorist now. You know, Frank Kaminsky gets this article in the Charlotte Observer last week and gets all this love, and I'm sitting here, maybe along with other people, I don't know. And I'm like, wait a minute. So he fills in for Zeller. He has a few 20-point games. Is not efficient, like he never is, from the floor. You know, turns the ball over at the same rate. I mean, I don't think like at Golden State and at Portland and, you know, even the other night, what was the game the other night where he was like 4 of 17 from
Brooklyn,
the floor?
Maybe?
But yeah, maybe Brooklyn, like 12 points, you know, 10 rebounds and 7 assists, like Rick Bonnell giving him all this love, like, wow, what a great game from Kaminsky. He went 4 of 17 from the floor. Like, what are we talking about? You know, so like, are we trying to spin him up to be something that he's not because we're trying to deal him? You know what I mean? Like, that's the conspiracy theorist coming out of me right now. But I look at this Frank Kaminsky praise, and CBSSports.com did like a, look, Frank Kaminsky coming out party this season. They did an article on him, and I'm just like, what? I don't see – like if there's a coming-out party, I wasn't invited, and I certainly don't see it on the court. So I don't know. Something smells fishy to me, Richie, with Kaminsky's. And I'm not so sure that we're not seriously having conversations with teams about him.
No, I mean, I would agree. I don't know if I'm a conspiracy theorist like you are, but yeah, I see that Plumlee is probably going to be our backup center. And I can see that Kaminsky is being thrown around in trade talks, and I would not be opposed to it. This coming out party that they're somehow talking about, I don't see it. You can't just base that off one or two games in a row. His season this year has been I don't know how to say it, but just it's been bad. It's been so much worse than last year's. He's been inconsistent. He lacks confidence. He can't score around the rim. So, yeah, I would not be opposed to trading him. And I see that move for Plumlee as being the one where, okay, he's going to be our backup center for the next 3 or 4 years unless we trade him.
Yeah, so and again, I'm not trying to be a conspiracy theorist, but I'm just giving you food for thought, listeners. I just want you to kind of take a step back and maybe consider what might be going on here. I don't know. I don't. All the love that he's getting recently is not deserved, and there might be another factor at play here. All right, so to answer my own question here at the beginning, I do think. I say it tentatively because I'm not sure, but I do think the Hornets probably make a move before the trade deadline because I do think that from the top, the basketball decision-making, which is Michael Jordan, I think he's saying get us into the playoffs. And I think it's really less of a financial thing for him and more just he's just a competitor. He wants to win. He doesn't believe in the tanking stuff. Which that's fine. I'm not against that. I'm not saying we need to tank. I'm just saying we need to ask some long-term questions seriously, which we're not doing. But so yeah, I think they do make a small trade. The names we've discussed around Williams, you know, Lou Williams, you know, Will Barton, Wilson Chandler. I think all these guys are going to be discussed by a lot of teams here at the deadline. Can the Hornets get into that mix? But I think if you're going to make a move with any of those guys, I think it requires a first round pick.
Yeah.
So, that is the trick. Are the Hornets willing to part with that piece? We will see.
Hey, Spencer, I got a quick Twitter question. It came in from @PatrickConnor7. The question was, could Cho's seat – we'll just touch upon this real quick. Can Cho's seat be a little warm if we don't make the playoffs?
Oh, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I'd forgotten that came in yesterday. You know, I don't know. I mean, my gut tells me yes, but –
It's an interesting question.
Yeah.
Obviously, if Cho's seat's going to be warm, he's going to be fired by MJ, which I think is funny because I feel like some of the moves that we make, especially in the draft, have been MJ's doing. So it's interesting. I don't know what all goes on behind the scenes. I feel like Cho, just based off what I'm hearing, I think he does better with the trades, even if it's for like a quick fix. I might give him like an overall grade on the trade aspect, maybe like a B. But when it comes to drafting him, Hornets in general, I don't know if you can really give him anything above like a D. I mean, our drafting has been poor. Our talent evaluation at that level has not been good. And I tweeted this the other day, but it just feels like every pick that we make, all the selections that we make when it comes to the draft, it's always like against the grain. Like anytime we make the selection, all the people on, you know, these draft shows are like confused. Like they're like, oh, they had player X and Y on the board, but they went with player Z. So, I mean, not that they're always right, but it just seems like we're always trying to get too cute with this and make these selections that just go against the grain all the time. So, yeah, I can see that Cho's seat becoming a little bit warm, but let's not act like MJ hasn't had a hand in some of these bad decisions.
Oh, no, you're 100% right. I mean, MJ, more than anything, has had a hand in these bad decisions, especially when it comes to the drafting. Yeah, okay. So I'm gonna actually change my answer. I'm gonna say no, though. I don't think so, and here's why. I just think as much confusion as there is, you know, revolving around the basketball decisions of this team, I do think there's enough stability, and I think it starts with Coach Clifford within the Hornets culture that, you know, I think everybody is on the same page. I don't get the sense that, you know, Coach Cliff is frustrated with the decision making. I mean, I think that Cho, Jordan, and Cliff, for the most part, are on the same page, and I think that the water is steady, so to speak. So, you know, that being said, I think they all believe in each other, and I wouldn't say if the Hornets missed the playoff this year that Cho's on the hot seat. I think that then we're kind of in holding mode with whether he'd be on the hot seat the following season if they don't make the playoffs, because we got to see, you know, what do they do to improve the team in the offseason. But I mean, if Cho lost his job because the Hornets missed the playoffs this season after the injuries they battled with Zeller, you know, and all the other things that have happened here, I would be terrified again of the long term plan of the Hornets and who's making the decisions and the ownership. I mean, it would kind of be like going back in time with the Bobcats. You know, it'd feel like that again. So no, I don't think he's on the hot seat. But, you know, a year from now, if we're having the same conversation, then I think maybe yes. But I think that Joe's going to be given a chance to kind of ride it out with this core that yeah. he's signed to these long-term deals. And really, again, that takes you through the 19 season. I mean, I don't think he's going anywhere until then. That's when all the changes come, Richie. You know, like you got to re-sign Kimba then, got to make a decision on Frank, got to make a decision on MKG. Got to make a decision on Marvin Williams. Like, that is when the rebuilding begins. You know what I mean? Or at least the reshifting of gears. Right. So.
Interesting situation. I mean, because we don't know how much of a backseat MJ has played a role in this, or if he's more heavy-handed. We don't know.
Correct. So we wanted to talk about Frank Kaminsky a little bit. And thank you, by the way, Patrick, for the question, and thank you for listening. So we want to talk about Frank a little bit. We wanted to debate on whether or not he is a center. It sounds like you actually think he's a power forward. I think he's a center naturally. I want to hear, am I right with that, Richie? You think he's a power forward?
Yeah. I also think he's a bad basketball player, but yeah.
Well, that's fair. Yeah. All right. Well, tell me why you think that Frank long-term is a power forward in the NBA.
So, yeah, I mean, I guess it might be an issue of semantics here. I don't know how you define a position. Do you base it off how they play on offense, or do you base it based on how they defend? So I've always done it where who they can defend. So if you have this player out in the court, can he defend a point guard? Can he defend a shooting guard? 3, 4, 5, whatever it may be. So offensively, yes. Kaminsky, I think that he could play a stretch five. He brings bigs away from the basket, creates the space in the middle of the court. Just look at the Jazz game. He did that. He started off really hot. He was involved heavily in the offense, making some threes. And then even when he stretches the bigs out to the basket, he does a pretty good job of driving to the basket in that open space as well. But however, I don't think he can guard fives. I don't really think any five with a semblance of a post game, he struggles. He definitely struggles. I think he benefited playing against the Jazz and the Nets to an extent, because Gobert, he works, you know, in those high post areas with the dribble handoffs and the pick and rolls. He's not going to be someone that you feed to the ball down in the post. He's going to be receiving lobs on pick and rolls, and at least you got backside help on that. So I think he benefited in that. And then Brook Lopez, his game is, you know, being spent more and more, you know, away from the basket, from the 3-point land. And then I did notice when he actually did back down Frank, he moved him. He moved him, you know, a significant amount of feet. So any big that has a semblance of a post game, I don't think Frank could guard. And it only works if he's out there with you know, great team defenders around him, and especially someone at a four, like maybe a Marvin, who can shift over and guard the five at times. So, I mean, regardless, if Frank can't produce offensively, I guess it doesn't really matter what position he plays, but if he's not converting from deep, he's going to be ineffective, whether that's at a four or a five. So you were talking about 2-3 podcasts ago, if he's not involved in the offense, he's not going to do well. And I think that's true. So, like, I feel like if he was a starting, you know, stretch four, I think that him being heavily involved in the offense, he would have produced similar numbers that he did against the Jazz and also against the Brooklyn Nets. That's just my thought.
Yeah. So I agree and disagree to an extent here. Let's start on the defensive end. I mean, here's what I would say about Frank is I think regardless of what position you play him defensively, you're going to be worse with him on the floor as a team. I think with Frank, you hope that it's kind of like the Jahlil Okafor debate a little bit in terms of, like, you know, it's an effort thing on the defensive end, and Frank just doesn't give you enough effort on the defensive end to give you signs that, okay, he's going to improve. But that is something that you can teach, right? That is something that you can get out of a player. You can teach somebody to try harder. But offensively, we see, you know, we see the potential. We see what he could be as a five. Offensively, you know, he is the wild card. He's the unicorn you know, insert your action word there with what kind of pressure he puts on defenses. If he gets it going from behind the arc, if you're putting him in situations where he's dribbling towards the rim, he's a great passer as a center. Like there are not many Frank Kaminskys in the league. You know, they could do all the things offensively that he can. So the thought is that you can teach him defense enough to make him, you know, barely below average to an average defender, rebounder, et cetera, et cetera. But then on the offensive end, he blossoms, and all of a sudden his value in the offensive end overrides what you lose on the defensive end. And the reason ultimately I think he's a center over a power forward is that, and this is where I disagree with you, I think it's easier for Frank to be involved in more offensive plays as a center than it is a power forward, because, you know, as the five, now you're putting him in more ball screens as the screener. As a five, he's getting more post touches. He's just touching the basketball more, I think.
But do you think he's good in the post?
Well, I don't think we've seen enough of it. No, I don't think he's good in the post yet. But, you know, again, Frank's one of those guys. It's unique. Like, when I say catching in the post, for Frank, that could mean like the short corner. That could mean like the mid-range area where he's facing up his defender, and now he's going to use his quickness to go by the bigger five, right? You know what I mean? So don't take literally like post. Don't picture that in your mind. Picture more just touches, offense going through him, right? Like, he needs to be the featured piece more. I think that's easier for him as the center than it is for the power forward. Why? Because he has more of a – he has a matchup advantage when he's the offensive center versus when he's the offensive power forward, because the power forward is going to be quicker, going to be, you know, going to be able to move with him, going to probably be strong enough to really, you know, body him up as well. Whereas a center, yes, he might have the physical advantage on Frank, but Frank's quicker and he's going to be able to get a shot off, and he's going to be able to go by that guy. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, a little bit. Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, I understand your argument. Frank is not a guy who's ever going to be a good player by being a corner spacer, you know, or, you know, a guy who's
right.
He's not a glue guy, right? Like, he needs to have offense run through him. He needs to get shots. He needs to get touches going to the basket with offense included in those touches, right? Now, he's not a connector. He's not a Marvin Williams, you know,
no.
That's what power forwards are in this league. The Patrick Pattersons and the Marvin Williams, these are guys that are smart basketball players. They have high IQs. They're connectors. And then they can hit a big shot in the corner, you know, when their defender has to come over and help and tag a guy rolling to the rim or stop a Kemba dribble penetration. That's not Frank Kaminsky. He needs to get the ball in ISO situations, you know, go against that bigger defender, try to go by him, get to the rim when the second defender comes. Now he's a good enough passer where he can make that extra pass and burn the defense. That's how I see him eventually exercising his greatest value in this league. I just don't see that happening at the power forward position. So
okay.
That's kind of where we disagree there.
But I guess we can both agree that if he's not producing from deep, he's not going to be effective at all, right? I mean, you can agree to that.
Sorry, say it again.
If he's not producing from behind the arc, he's not going to be an effective player. I mean, he's going to be a net negative, basically.
Yes, I pretty much agree with that. I mean, I still think that if he's put into a situation where, you know, he is getting the ball in ISO situations, you know, as the center going against opposing center, you know, he can create offense. I mean, I do believe that. I think that, you know, his game is very spotty. His decision-making is spotty, but we've seen how good of a passer he is.
Right.
We've seen how skilled he is with the basketball in his hands, even on the dribble. You know, he can score. And so when you're a good passer and you're a good scorer, the IQ part and being able to read defenses, it will follow by just getting repetition at ISO situations and having offensive run through you, you know? So, you know, that's the last experiment for Frank Kaminsky, and it's hard for me to believe there's not a team out there who says, let's see, let's make him our starting center, and let's see
right. What
happens in a year or two of experimentation of him being a serious focal point of an offense. I don't know who that team is, but that's the last frontier for Frank Kaminsky's development. And if he doesn't get that chance, Richie, I don't think he makes it in the NBA, personally.
Right. Another one of those picks that went against the grain.
You know what I mean? And that, what I just said, is exactly why I think the Hornets are probably trying to trade him, because they're like, you know, he doesn't fit here. We've kind of seen enough of this, the sample size that he's given us. I don't think he's a great fit next to a Steve Clifford culture coach team, personally. And so it's really why I think they're trying to trade Frank. But that's a good conversation there. That's a good debate. And I think that there's probably some truths to both the power forward and center fit for Frank. But healthy conversation there. All right, let's kind of transition to these next two home games the Hornets have before they go on their West Coast trip. Richie, I want to throw it to you, and it kind of feels like the Hornets have to have both of these games. Is that fair?
Right. I mean, you talked about it at the beginning. I mean, we can call them must wins, but I think any game at this point is a must win if we're trying to get to a respectable record. We don't have any room for error. So, like, we're sitting outside the playoffs. So, yes, we got to take these two wins. And to be honest with you, Spencer, to end on a positive note here in this last segment, I actually think that we could win both of these games. Tonight, obviously, is going to be the more difficult one against the Clippers, but I would not be surprised. I would not be surprised if we win this game tonight. We're playing the Clippers, who have played the last 10 games without Chris Paul, and they are 3-7 without him. And guess who they got starting? Doc's son, Austin Rivers, who I don't really view as a point guard per se. I mean, he's not going to be the one that's dishing out these assists and facilitating the offense. He's very much an ISO heavy type of player. I never liked him at Duke.
He's been good. He has been good since CP3 went out, though. I will give him that.
Has he? I didn't know.
Yes, he's been better. I mean, you know, not excellent, but certainly better. I think he's definitely improved this season. But yeah, didn't mean to cut you off.
No, I mean, that's kind of where I'm ending it here. So I think that Kemba actually could kind of turn things around tonight against a player in Austin Rivers who's not known to kind of stop people on the defensive end. So yeah, to ending on a positive note with this segment, I can see us winning the next two games. But what that means for our season, I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think both these games are certainly winnable. You know, especially the Philadelphia game. Sounds like they might be out. Embiid might not play once again. He hasn't played in, I think, about 7 straight games now. So they're a different team now, you know, without Embiid on the floor. But, yeah, I don't know if folks will get this pod. I don't know if we'll get this out before 5 p.m. tip tonight. But so I want to limit how much we talk about the Clippers game. I think if Zeller doesn't play, I think watching Frank go against DeAndre Jordan should be something. I'm not sure what, but that should be interesting. So, yeah, but the Clippers obviously are not the same team, you know, without Chris Paul. And who else are they down? Well, Blake's back now, right?
Yeah, he's back, yeah.
Yeah, he's back. So, but there, I mean, obviously, if CP3 is not in there, the Clippers are just fundamentally very, very different. He connects all the dots for them. So, yeah, I think both games are winnable. I think if the Hornets get both of them, they take some serious momentum on this West Coast trip, and all of a sudden you say, all right, let's see what they're made of. Like, can they go on this West Coast trip? You know, can they go 500 on the West Coast trip? And there are some winnable games on this trip. I mean, they go to Sacramento. They go to the Lakers. They go to Detroit. They go to the Clippers. I think they go to Denver. So it's not like, you know, they're not going to play the Oklahoma Cities, the Golden States, the San Antonios, and Houston's in this West Coast trip. But they're playing all teams that are all in the playoff hunt but are beatable. So if they can win these next two at home, I think they go on this West Coast trip with knowing that if they go drop 7, the season's over. If they find a way to go 500 or maybe get 3 of those 4, they're still in the hunt, right? Like, this is it, Richie. Like, we're at the crossroads.
Yeah.
And it starts with these first two games at home. Now, on the flip side of that, if they don't get these two games at home, if they get 1 of 2, I think it's going to go bad out west. If they lose both of them, I think the conversation approaching the trade deadline all of a sudden changes to – either hold or talk about Kaminsky, Batum, MK, talk about sending one of those guys away and hitting a mini reset. You know, I don't know, but these the next 72 hours are going to change a lot of the internal conversation with the Charlotte Hornets. Richie, the last question I want to present to you is, looking at the remaining schedule this year, I want you to give me, record-wise, the ceiling for the Hornets, and then record-wise, again, the floor for the Charlotte Hornets, in your opinion.
Golly, this is putting me on the spot here. I would say a ceiling of 41 wins. Is that pessimistic? And then a floor.
No, I don't.
Okay. And then a floor, I don't know, maybe 34 wins. I'm not sure. I'm bad at this. I'm bad at predicting things because, you know, the season can take so many different turns. It could, like you said, it could take, you know, losing these two home games and our direction dramatically shifts from building for the future versus building for right now and winning. So these upcoming games will kind of dictate kind of where we go from here.
Correct. No, I don't think that's being pessimistic. I think that those are actually pretty reasonable guesses. So I will start with the ceiling. No. I'm going to start with the floor here. I think the floor for the Hornets I think it's 36, 37 wins, you know, somewhere right there. And the reason I say that is because, look, Kemba Walker is an all-star this year. He's an NBA Eastern Conference all-star. That hasn't happened since Gerald Wallace, okay, a long time ago. He will return to form. He's an all-star. You know, he's had a few bad games. I wanted to save this opinion till the end, but he's going to get it back. He's going to recapture his all-star form, and he's going to put the Hornets on his back and carry them to somewhere around 36, 37 wins at the worst. Staying on that same topic, Kim is going to return to form. Zeller can maybe get healthy. We can rediscover our form a little bit. I think the Hornets can get to 44, 45 wins. And I think that they can potentially make a late surge and get to the seventh seed in the Eastern Conference. You know, maybe even if the stars align perfectly from here on out, they could climb as high as a sixth seed. But, there have been too many good signs this year for me to just have the doomsday outlook, if that makes sense. I mean, if all else fails this year, we can't forget that Kemba Walker is an NBA All-Star, and Charlotte hasn't seen that since Gerald Wallace in 2010, I think. So, you know, that's a step forward for a franchise that is perpetually without a quote-unquote superstar. You know, not that Kemba's a superstar, but he is a star, and we've at least made that step. Does that make Hornets, you know, more of a free agent destination moving forward because there's a Kemba Walker here that, you know, the guys are going to watch him on TNT All-Star Weekend next week. And, Richie, I don't know your opinion on this. Maybe we'll get to do a show before All-Star Weekend, but Kemba's – the way he plays, you know, the flashiness, he's certainly capable of scoring 40 in an All-Star game and winning the MVP. I don't think that's crazy to think about.
No.
If he gets, you know, he'll come off the bench in that game, but if he gets enough minutes. So, you know, I'm not ready to hit the panic button with Charlotte in terms of, you know, we're going to end the season with 30 to 32 wins. I'm just not ready to go there. I do think the team sneaks into the playoffs, and I think it all happens on the back of Kemba Walker because he has been that good, and he deserves that from the fans, I think. And right. It's been bad, I understand, but he deserves the respect and he deserves the confidence from the fans that they're going to get this turned around. And, you know, so I would beg of that from Hornets fans right now to just stick in there. And I can't say trust the process because we can't steal that term, but trust Kemba, you know, trust what he's done, trust the player he is, trust the leader that he is, and let's see if the Hornets can get this thing turned around. All right, Richie, how you spending your Saturday? Oh, you're going to the game.
I'm going to the game. So, yeah, in about 2 or 3 hours, I'm going to head over to my friend's place, and he has season tickets, so he invited me. That's why I've gone to these games, these giveaway games. He's always invited me to the giveaway game, so I'll be going to another one where they're going to pass out Kemba's little action figure.
Awesome. Kemba action figure night. Things have to go well, right?
Exactly. Against Rivers, it's going to work.
Yeah, it's going to work. All right, man. Well, look, go enjoy your day. I think I'm going to try to get the sticks out. It's beautiful out. This weather, by the way, is just is the wonkiest stuff ever. It's early in the week here in Virginia. It was 70 degrees for two straight days. There are three straight days, maybe. And then it drops to below freezing for like 2 days, and like 40 was the high, you know, by 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and then today it's back up to 70. This is frustrating. Like, can we pick a season, please?
We're getting spoiled here.
You know what I mean? It's weird. But so I'm gonna try to get the sticks out and hit the little white golf ball around today. But yeah, go enjoy your Saturday, Richie. Tell our listeners where they can find us again, and where they can find you on Twitter.
Once again, guys, you guys are able to listen to us on the computer or in the car. Just download the Stitcher app or search BuzzBeat in iTunes to download all of our podcasts to date. Once again, this is going to be our 12th episode. And also, please rate and review us as well on iTunes. That would be greatly appreciated. And then if you do follow us on Twitter, whether that be myself at Richie Randall or Spencer at QCH Spencer, or the podcast Twitter handle at BuzzBeat Podcast, whenever we put out a podcast post, we would appreciate that you retweet it. As our fellow almighty baller podcaster Daniel Green says, refrain from liking it and retweet it, please, so we can get it out to more people. Again, thanks for the support, and we will see you guys soon.
Awesome. So we are part of QueenCityHoops.com, so please go check out all the good stuff over there at the website. And we're also a part of the Almighty Baller Podcast Network, so be sure you're checking out all the cool other NBA podcasts. And they've got, folks, they got everything. They got all the different team podcasts. They got DFS podcasts. They've got, I mean, it's all there. So make sure you're checking out almightyballer.com. Again, we're taking over the NBA podcasting universe. So if you're not on board now, you're going to regret it later. So go check that out. All right, so we'll see you guys next week. Go Hornets. Thanks.